107.3. WAAF.
Black Sabbath.
Iron Maiden.
Black Label Society.
Shadows Fall.
Mudvayne.
It's Ozfest.
Live from the Tweeter Center.
The 10th anniversary Ozfest is off to a great start right now. Mistress Carrie is amongst the missing over in the second stage area.
No, I'm here.
Oh, are you?
Yeah, I'm plotting the rebellion, Paul. Oh, you got your first beer.
Yeah, Sean hooked me up. The guys at Sergeant Street hooked me up with a beer, so I'm golden right now.
I'm plotting the rebellion.
Oh, really?
I'm mustering up the troops for the chant.
Oh, yeah.
When Zakk Wylde goes on stage at 5:05.
Yeah, if you guys are on your way to the Tweeter Center for tonight's Ozfest festivities, Zakk has now threatened to pull us out on stage. And when that happens, there's only two words you need to say, the first one being Yankees, and you know how this works.
You know, the other one's an S-word.
Yeah, so we know how this works. We expect it to be as loud as possible and to drown out his intro.
Yeah, because we need to go to war over this one.
You know, people have been offering to burn the jersey.
Yeah, I'm afraid they're going to do that while we're still wearing it.
But the good part about
these things are polyester. They don't breathe.
A lot of people don't realize that we're going to have, Zakk has offered to take the jerseys back and get them signed by the members of Black Sabbath and Iron Maiden and stuff, and then we're going to auction them off for charity.
Yeah, which is pretty cool, although I don't even know. Even a Yankees jersey signed by Sabbath, do you still want it?
It's still Black Sabbath.
You know?
Well,
but
I think
it's still the Yankees.
And it's for the kids.
You know what, though? We may have to burn them in effigy. Listen.
I believe it was the first
annual Burn the New York Yankees Uniforms for the Kids.
For the kids.
The bonfire will commence after the show for the kids.
Which movie was it where the guy said in a deep Scottish accent, burn it. Burn it down.
I don't know.
Burn it all down.
I don't know. I just watched this guy behind me.
Yeah.
He's got a skin laceration on his knee.
Yeah.
He's dripping blood. He just wiped it off and licked it.
That's hot.
No, it really wasn't.
Hepatitis, everybody.
Yeah.
Welcome to it.
Pretty much. Everybody's going to need a tetanus shot when they get out of here at Ozfest.
You know what was funny is we were standing over by a dumpster the whole time, which just seems appropriate.
When you're wearing these uniforms, yeah, it is appropriate.
Yeah, we're taking enough abuse, I mean, from all sides, quite frankly. And that's all right. So why don't we do this? Well, Hannah's back in the studio. Hello, Hannah.
What's up, Hannah?
Hello.
You can take care of the commercial thing for us, right? And then we'll come back and hook up with some Ozfest-themed Headbangers Neanderthal, old school style?
We shall.
All right, excellent. We're broadcasting live from the Tweeter. It's Ozfest 2005, the 10th anniversary. It's Neanderthal along with Mistress Carrie wearing Yankees tampons. If it rocks, it's 107.3 WAAF.
107.3 WAAF.
What we got to do is we got to put the sound of the transmitter on radio waves. We got to amplify it and then direct it toward the aliens. I know it'll work.
The Headbangers Ball.
Listen to it.
All right, so we're broadcasting live. We're actually hanging out by the second stage at the Tweeter Center, Ozfest 2005. Headline tonight by Black Sabbath and Iron Maiden, which is cool. This is our first chance to see Iron Maiden in a long time. And they're doing all early stuff. Everything, I think it's pre-Peace of Mind or pre-Power Slave material from Iron Maiden tonight. So why don't we kick off the Headbangers Neanderthal with, the one that I think first introduced everybody to the band. I remember the first time I heard this song, I was inside of Quincy's Records and Tapes on Hancock Street.
You weren't getting laid?
I was not getting laid. Very difficult to get laid to Iron Maiden, although the beat is there. Steve Harris has that sort of...
Yes.
That galloping... You could ride to an Iron Maiden song.
Yes, you could.
But you'd be riding in a steeplechase. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I gotcha. Yeah,
not a whole lot of rhythm, just a lot...
Steeplechase reference.
Nice. You like that?
Yep.
Thanks. I think that might be the first steeplechase reference on WAAF.
At Ozfest. Yeah, specifically
nice
at
job.
Ozfest.
It's a day at first here at the Tweeter Center.
Yeah, so hopefully lasts.
Yeah, outstanding. As we broadcast in the Yankees memorabilia to fulfill our portion of the bet. Some Iron Maiden now. If it rocks, it's 107.3 WAAF.
107.3 WAAF. Rock and roll summer camp comes to Boston.
It's Ozfest.
Live from the Tweeter Center.
I'll tell you what, man. The better weather we could never have asked for. Great night, a great day, a great night coming up here at the Tweeter Center. Ozfest 2005, the 10th anniversary kicks off in Boston, which is nice. Lots of weird things happening, not the least of which is people correcting people who didn't know that we lost the bet. It's because, you know, walking around in a Yankees jersey, probably not a good idea. Wasn't really great planning, you know what I mean?
Now this sucks.
Yeah. But, you know.
Become vulgar. Anger. What did you say?
I hate your shirt.
See?
Thanks. Yeah, that's the way it's going to be.
Just absorbing anger and filth like that, like Michael Clark Duncan in The Green Mile.
Yeah.
When he spews out all that black crap.
Yeah.
That's what I feel like. I'm going to go home and vomit all this evil energy.
You are infinitely less attractive with that jersey on. Seriously.
Oh, look, and a member of the Black Label Society.
Oh, great. Oh,
and you know what? I'm not a Yankee fan, but I'm a Mets fan, and we got to Boston too. 86, bro. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, we were there. I know.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Why don't you just
crying in the dugout?
No. Why don't you just say the name? Go ahead, say it.
Well, what do you want to hear, Buckner?
Yeah, that's the one I knew was coming.
You know what's great is now they sell on airplane the Sky Malls. You can buy a picture signed by Buckner and Mookie.
Yeah, isn't that great?
That's awesome.
Great. Yeah, that's awesome. Thanks for cashing in on our misery, Bill.
Hey, congratulations for living 20 years in the past too. Nice job. He's moving on now.
Yeah, he doesn't want to take the abuse anymore.
Oh, it starts out. Thank you, man, very much. I got a nice sip of that. I'll drink it if you're going to give it to me. I'll take it. Nice. I got a free drink out of the deal. This is good. I'll tell you what. We have heard rumors that Bruce Dickinson, lead throat of Iron Maiden, who are co-headlining the main stage tonight, is going to be stopping by a little bit later on. So let's get these commercials out of the way. We'll come back, and maybe we'll talk to a metal legend in just a few right here at 107.3 WAAF.
107.3 WAAF. Rock and roll summer camp comes to Boston. It's Ozfest, live from the Tweeter Center.
So for me, this is kind of cool because I'm standing here in the backstage area behind the catering area watching a rock and roll legend, a true legend, signed memorabilia, which is kind of cool. Signed a couple of programs for us and copies of records that he's been on. The legendary Geezer Butler joins us here on 107.3 WAAF. Welcome back to Boston.
Wow. Thank you very much.
How are you, sir?
Very hot at the moment, but well.
You look really good. Like that's what everybody said. They're going, wow, they saw Geezer. He looks really good. What's that supposed to mean?
I think they're all liars.
Nah, you look good. Like, it's really weird. Last year at Ozfest, when we had Glenn Tipton back here, it was the same thing. You English guys just seem to kind of walk out of your dressing room or your bus or whatever it is, and you're ready. You're cooking with gas. You're ready to go.
It's probably all the Guinness we drink.
Is it? Is that what your drinking choice is?
Looking young.
So now, well, again, back out on the tour with Black Sabbath.
Yeah.
And, of course, you've done all those tours with Ozzy in the past as a solo artist, and now promoting your own solo record. It was just the second or third solo album for you.
The third solo.
Yeah. And have you find that people are receptive to your solo material?
Yeah, when they hear it, you know. I mean, it takes a long time for people to actually know that it's out there, because obviously we don't get mass radio play or anything like that. But, it's been picking up, you know, starting to get around.
So what is the mindset of a bass player getting together? Like, do you write your songs on a six string, or do you just do it with other people? I mean, a lot of people don't think of bass players as primarily multi-instrumental songwriters.
Yeah, well, that's what's so hard when we're writing with Sabbath, because I'm stuck on my bass, but I'm trying to write stuff. But on my own stuff, I write on guitar mainly. Some of it keyboards and some of it bass. And I get together with Pedro, standing over there, with the singer Clark, who's from Worcester, Massachusetts.
Nice!
And, we just all get together at the end, and we play each other what we've got, and go from there, really.
And what's it like to, when you're trying to recruit a band, what's it like to, do you find people that are, how tough is it to find guys that are level-headed and don't get awestruck by the fact that they're sitting in a room with a legend?
It's not so much awestruck, it's more, I don't want to work with people that are smashed out of their head all the time. I don't want to work with people that are into the music rather than to get some, you know, use me as a stepping stone for their own good.
Does that happen? Has that happened?
It can happen, but, you can tell. When you get the right people together, you can always tell.
And is that something, like, as soon as you get in, you can feel the chemistry? Because you can't create that, right?
Can't create it. No, it has to be like that spark, and you know that it's always nice, you know, when it does happen and everybody agrees on what music we should be playing, what direction, and just get on well together, no egos, all that kind of thing, you know.
Did you ever think that when the reunion tour happened with Black Sabbath, that a few years later you guys would still go out and do more reunion tour, sort of an extended reunion, so to speak?
It is a very much extended reunion, because with Sabbath, you never know from one year to the next if we're going to see each other again.
Is that an open end? You guys have sort of an open ended agreement. Is that how that works?
Yeah, I mean, when I did the solo album, I just finished that, and we were just like planning when to go on tour with it. And then Ozzy phones me up and says, "Do you want to do Sabbath this summer?" And I went, "Oh yeah, all right."
All right, yeah.
Sabbath always comes first, you know.
Does it really?
Yeah.
Even at this point, because I mean, let's face it, you have a solo career. And Tony has a solo career,
yeah.
And Ozzy has obviously a very legendary solo career as well. you don't really need Sabbath anymore, but yet...
You don't need it, but we always have such a great time when we're together these days. You know, we all talk about the old times, and it's just great. You know, the kids still love it, so...
Do you find that amazing when you go out there? I mean, the first reunion tour I saw, I think it was 99, and I had a chance to see it in Biloxi, Mississippi. And the thing that amazed me was you didn't really play anything, I think, that was written after 1978.
Yeah.
And yet the average age of the people in the audience was probably maybe 22 or 23.
It's amazing.
How amazing is that? Because everybody asks Ozzy and asks Tony about it. How amazing is that for you to realize that so many years later, you're still the most influential heavy metal band of all time?
It's absolutely incredible, you know. It's I mean, I see it myself with my own children, you know, when they love Pink Floyd and other older bands like that. You know, they're totally... When Pink Floyd did the Live Aid, my kids thought that was the greatest thing ever.
Did you go to that?
Nah, we were in Europe at the time, playing in Europe.
Yeah.
But, I mean, on this passion, we just finished 3 weeks tour in Europe.
A Sabbath tour or a Geezer tour?
Sabbath.
Oh, really?
And, at some of the shows, the average age was probably about 12.
It's
absolutely unbelievable.
That's got to be mind-blowing. I mean, you can't... I mean, for anybody that's never stood on a stage, they can't possibly comprehend. Night after night, city after city, all around the world, everybody knows every word, every note, every solo, every gaffe. If something goes wrong, the audience catches it. It's got to be amazing to be the guy that wrote the textbook for the heaviness of rock.
Yeah, it's absolutely... I mean, what got me was when we played in Athens. It was the first time we've ever played in Greece, is the original Sabbath. And, like, all the... This is the home of, like, Homer and all these incredible old philosophers and all that, you know, great writers. And all the audience are singing along to all the Sabbath songs. And it just was so weird for me, you know.
Is it more fun now than it was then?
It's fun in a different way. I mean, it's a lot more relaxed now. Nobody's on illegal substances anymore.
It's satisfying?
But it really is satisfying. It's great to be able to go on every night, totally clear-headed. And I think the musicianship is better than ever within the band.
There has never been a heavier song written than the original three chords of Black Sabbath, the song Black Sabbath. I mean, there are many bands have tried since to try and be heavier. I mean, Slipknot nowadays and Mudvayne and System of a Down and stuff. How awe-inspiring is it of you to see other bands sort of try to bring it to another level and still...
It is absolutely amazing, you know, after all these years that people still... because the critics hated us in the 70s when we first started out. But other bands have always liked us, so we're sort of having the last laugh now, you know. We were put down so badly in the 70s and stuff, but we always had a great following. And it really is particularly nice to see bands these days citing us as one of the influences.
So now Geezer Butler has a solo album out, and Tony Iommi has a solo album out, and Ozzy has made a couple of overtures about going out and doing some more solo stuff, maybe another solo tour after the Black Sabbath thing happens with Ozfest this year. The inevitable question has to be asked during every interview. What are the odds that we'll see a new Black Sabbath album featuring all the creative minds all back together doing a completely new album of originals?
It will only happen if the spark's right.
Yeah.
There's one good thing about this band. We won't do it just, you know, for the money side of it. So we did get together about 4 years ago and attempt to do an album, but we felt it was more for the record company's sake than our sake.
Yeah.
And we never want to put out a substandard thing. There's such a big legacy that we've left, you know. We don't want to put out a substandard album just for the sake of putting out an album. But I think, you know, if we didn't force it and we got together and the spark was all there, then definitely there's nothing stopping us from doing a new album.
How would you know if that happened? Like, could you know during a sound check or just getting together to rehearse? Do you, like, set a rehearsal time?
In fact, because we had quite a few chances to... Because on the last Ozfest we've been doing, you don't get any chance, because it's like goes start at 9 in the morning, it goes all day. So you don't get chance for sound checks or anything.
Sure.
But this time in Europe, we were sound checking practically every day, and we were jamming along, coming out with some really good stuff, I thought. And, you know, at the end of this tour, I'm sure we'll go through some of the stuff that we came out with and see if it's worth carrying on with.
An extreme pleasure to talk to a true rock legend, and you should go pick up the new Geezer Butler CD, as well as tickets to the next Ozfest, maybe down in Connecticut and stuff. And Black Sabbath, legendary band, you can't miss them every time they come around. I mean, eventually it's going to be the last time.
Yep.
And I'm glad it's not this time.
It's
so am I.
So, Geezer Butler, thank you for taking time with us here at WAAF. And we'll be back more from Ozfest 2005, the 10th anniversary, featuring the mighty Black Sabbath. Once again, Geezer, thank you so much
again.
Thank
you very much.
It's WAAF live at Ozfest. If it rocks, it's 107.3 WAAF live at Ozfest 2005, the 10th anniversary in the backstage area. Just sort of awaiting the next arrival of somebody that we can talk to and almost trying to impress with our musical knowledge. Unfortunately, we don't have that kind of skill right now. He's already left, but I just found it, or at least Hannah found it back in the studio. Brand new Geezer Butler stuff. This is called I Believe. If it rocks, it's AAF.
107.3 WAAF. Back to the Tweeter Center. And more of Ozfest Live.
If it rocks, it's 107.3 WAAF hanging out backstage at the Tweeter Center. And the only reason why we're backstage, quite frankly, because there's shade here. It's a good place to get out of the sun. Good sunstroke happening out there right now. And quite frankly, this year, a lot of chicks in bikini tops that should be wearing bikini tops. This is a very attractive Ozfest this year. Congratulations, you brought it this time, and that's what it's all about. Tonight, we're getting ready to kick off the main stage in just a couple minutes. Let me tell you what's going on, just in case you're on your way over here. The main stage is pretty much in flames. We'll kick everything off in just a couple minutes, and then they'll do a set change, and then Black Label Society, where Mistress Carrie and I will continue to get abused by one Zach Wilde. From about 5 to 5:45, you get Black Label Society. Shadows Fall at 5:55. To 6:35, and tentatively scheduled 6:45. You get, 6:35, Shadows Fall, 6:45, Mudvayne, and they're going to play for about 50 minutes or so. Iron Maiden kicks off at 8:05, and they play for an hour, and Black Sabbath will start around 9:30 and play till just about 11 o'clock. So that's pretty much how it is, but of course, with this being the first show of Ozfest 2005, all subject to change. You know how that works out. I mean, you schedule one thing one way, and then some guy can't find his bass strings or some sort of a thing, so something gets pushed ahead. But that's how it is right now, the way it's set up. At some point, a little bit later on, we're supposed to hear from Bruce Dickinson. He's going to stop by, the lead throat from Iron Maiden, who now has a solo CD out as well. So we'll have him come by. He'll talk to us here as we continue celebrating the return of Ozfest, the 10th anniversary, live from the Tweeter Center.
107.3 WAAF. Back to the Tweeter Center. And more of Ozfest Live.
All right, let's see if I can get the resume correctly. We've got world-class swordsman, author, pilot, rock star, solo artist, singer of a legendary new wave of British heavy metal band, and all-around nice guy. Did I get it all right, Bruce?
Yeah, just countdowns, that's all.
What did I leave out?
Countdowns.
Oh, he cannot dance.
Yep.
Yeah, see, I got to translate for those that can't speak the proper English. Thank you for taking time out. Bruce Dickinson from Iron Maiden making some time out to hang with us here at WAAF. Welcome back to Boston.
Yeah, it's good to be here. Yeah, just got in last night, actually.
We were more than beyond stoked to find out that Iron Maiden were going to be co-headlining Ozfest this year, because it was last year we were talking about when Priest played. We're like, wow, wouldn't it be great if we could have got Priest, Iron Maiden, and Sabbath all on the same bill? Wasn't to be last year, but we got a good, nice make good this year. Thanks for doing this.
Yeah, well, it's great because it's great to get out and, you know, have a kind of younger audience here as well, really, because that's what we're used to playing to in Europe. It's pretty cool.
Do you find that the kids in Europe are the younger kids are more turned on to older Iron Maiden music than the American kids?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
And why is that?
I don't know. I mean, I guess. Well, you know, I can hazard a guess. I mean, I think there's some. There's a lot of the. A lot of the media over here are kind of, you know, unwilling to expose Maiden to younger kids because they think, you know, it's an arc and older thing. But in Europe, that's not the case because we've never had media coverage anyway. So the kids, you know, they read a lot more. They read a lot. They get a lot of information through magazines and the internet and stuff like that. But I mean, we just came. Our last gig was a stadium in Sweden, 56,000 people.
And was it just, and what was it, an Ozfest type gig, or was it just you and another band, a support band?
It was us.
Just you?
It sold out in 2 hours, 9 months ago.
How long was the set?
It's like, you know, hour 45.
So you did an hour and 45 minutes. Now, we have been told that during this tour, you're going to be doing predominantly early Maiden stuff. Well, Bruce Dickinson
only,
Maiden stuff.
Only. No. We're doing stuff from the first four albums.
Oh, no kidding.
Yep. So the stuff tonight, I mean, expect to hear stuff like Phantom of the Opera and songs like that, and you know, all the early stuff. And it's amazing because the songs just sound really, really contemporary. They don't sound dated, so I'm very pleased to be doing it.
Well, you just mentioned that the kids in England and in Europe read a lot more. That's really how I think a lot of people in the United States were first made aware of Iron Maiden. They all saw the Eddie cartoon on the back of somebody's jean jacket, and they went, who's this band, Iron Maiden?
Yeah.
And then that's... So do you feel a sense of satisfaction that it was put together real as opposed to being manufactured by some of the bands? Is it satisfying? Well, or is it frustrating?
No, Iron Maiden's always been real. The thing about Maiden is that what's created Maiden is the audience has created Maiden. I mean, we've come up with Eddie and we've come up with all these other things, but it's the audience that creates Maiden. You know, they're the people that go out and support the band and buy the records and come see us. And so, you know, we're there for them. You know, it's not the other way around.
And what are the future plans for the band? Obviously, you're doing this tour here, doing all the other stuff. Are you guys going to jump back in the studio after this tour and maybe give us some new Maiden music?
There's going to be a new Maiden album. It'll be out towards the end of next year. And obviously, there'll be a tour associated with that.
One of the greatest things about Iron Maiden is they have done some things differently than their contemporaries, one of which is they own their own record catalog now. They do a lot of their own production stuff. You own a lot of your own, pretty much your own subsidiary record label now, correct?
No.
Well, Sanctuary, and you guys have a business connection with that, correct?
Well, Sanctuary Managers.
Yeah, and then Sanctuary Records, correct? There's a tie-in there.
Well, yeah, but Sanctuary, I don't want to get into it, but Sanctuary does, like, all kinds of things, not just on Maiden.
Well, it started with you, though. I mean, it was the house that Bruce built.
Yeah, well, you know, it does Elton John and Beyonce now as well.
Does it really?
Oh, gotcha. It's
like, how great is that?
It has 600 employees, and they're not all to do with Iron Maiden.
Well, you would think, though.
It's a great label. Put it this way. It's a great label, and it understands metal. The metal part of Sanctuary understands metal. But in Europe, we're with EMI.
Yeah.
So, I mean, and we've been with EMI for years and years and years for most of the world. So it's only recently that, in fact, I think we're just sort of concluding the last couple of things with Sony. And we're sort of, you know, up for grabs. So I don't know who we'll be with in the States. But certainly, you know, there's a record to come out on a different label, you know, the next studio album, I should imagine.
So now we're looking at, you know, I mean, obviously there's a different era of MTV now and very little music actually being played on music television.
MTV, yes. It's a joke, isn't it?
But the occasional time you see a video, you'll see one of these new emo bands or one of these sort of pop punk bands wearing an Iron Maiden t-shirt.
Yeah.
Is that just sort of them trying to glom on to the fashion and trying to seem hip?
No, it's because, you see, the thing about Iron Maiden is we've never been fashionable.
Yeah.
And because we've never been fashionable, and we don't care about MTV, and we don't care about, you know, being seen in, on Jay Leno, and we don't care about chat shows or anything else. What we care about is going and playing gigs to the people that we admire, which is our audience. And that's all we care about. And you can't really, America is such a celebrity-orientated country that I think people find it difficult to understand that we just think that whole thing's a crock of, SH1T.
Excellent. Nice. Now, you have a solo record out. You're one of those guys that you don't take much time off, do you? You're pretty busy.
Tend not to. Life's not a rehearsal, you know.
So you got point A, point B, and you're just running as fast and as far as you can?
Well, you know, I just do things that feel right. So it had been about 7 years since Chemical Wedding, since the last solo album.
Yep.
And I was getting it in the ear from a lot of fans who wanted another one, you know. And so I got bitten by the bug again, you know, that my producer, Roy Z, called me up and said, look, I've got a bunch of guitar riffs. And so I had a bunch of lyrics and off we went.
And here is brand new music from Bruce Dickinson.
You're going to play the record?
Yeah, see, and some stations in America will actually play a solo Bruce Dickinson
song. That's astounding.
You like that?
Have you taken leave of your senses?
Well, you took the time out to hang with us. We figured we should take the time out to hook you up.
Well, I think you're splendid people. Excellent. All right, great. So what's this? Abduction are you going to play?
Yes, Abduction.
Tyranny of Souls. Ah, wicked.
Brand new music from Bruce Dickinson. If it rocks, it's 107.3 WAAF. Thank you for taking time out. Finger from 10,000-20,000 people.
You thought it went by fast. I thought it was the slowest 35 minutes of my life.
Oh, by the way, Mike Shue just let us know. Gong alert.
What?
Gong alert.
Gong?
Mike Shue just told us. Mike Shue, huge gong. We have a big gong. So I don't know which band is utilizing said gong. I'm wondering, was that a Black Label Society gong? Because I think it might be coming off stage.
I don't know, but we need to recap the last half hour between the three of us and kind of
catch
up on
what you guys. Because I had to go and talk to this Tony Iommi guy. He's in that Black Eyed Peas.
How was that?
He was awesome.
Yeah?
Quite the English gentleman rock star.
Proper gentleman. That's the same thing with, you know, Geezer when we talked to him a little bit earlier.
He had a bus that was way nicer than my house.
Did you get to go on the bus?
Oh, dude.
How cool was that?
It's a palace.
Was his wife on the bus?
No, Carrie. What is up with you and Tony Iommi's wife?
Let her go with this.
Hello. She was a lead singer of Drain SGH. She's
Hello.
A completely hot piece
not,
of ass.
On a scale of 1 to 10, 15.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello. A lot of mirrors on the bus.
Yeah. I'm just saying. That would have been a lot of fun to watch. And
you can tell Tony Iommi's one of those freaky bastards.
You know what?
You think?
His bus has this door that, you know, you go into the bus. And
the room
you walk
behind
by
which
the
door you cannot
sits.
Go?
And then this door behind us goes,
oh,
just
wait,
like Star Trek.
Star Trek.
Star Trek door?
Nice.
So we're done. We're like, thank you very much. And then the guy, we go to open
you
the
can
door.
Leave.
We can't open it.
Really?
And Tony's like, ha, 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 ha. I'm like, this is it. It's true. He eats flesh. Oh, my God.
I'm going to die because Tony Iommi is going to eat my flesh.
He's thinking, finally, I found the genetic match for this finger.
I know, really.
So yeah, we went up on stage and the Black Label Society was on stage doing their thing, and they positioned us to the right of James Lomenzo, former bass player of
Hi.
White Lion.
Yeah, that's why I didn't know that.
There you go.
Yeah,
Paul didn't get laid a lot in the '80s.
No, I didn't. Not at all. So there, they
surprising
put us
surprising going to White Lion shows.
Hey, come
There's
on
so
now.
Many sluts at those shows.
Yes, that yes.
And hey. Oh, I saw White Lion.
That's right.
Uh-huh.
Thanks, Mike Shue.
Way to go. So they put us over there right next to the bass cabinets, in full view of the entire amphitheater.
Yeah. Have you ever gotten the finger from 20,000 people before, Mike Shue?
Yeah, once when I broke down on the Sagamore Bridge.
No.
Yeah, that's a little. It's very similar. Very similar experience.
This is a little bit different because.
But these are Black Label Society fans.
Exactly. Yeah. When you get the finger from people trying to get to the Cape that are in golf shirts, it's a completely different anger altogether.
And then there's the guys that were looking at us. It was really weird. Like when we were out in the crowd earlier during the at the second stage, people surrounded us and they were sort of the violent, you know, like, oh, I can't believe you're wearing it, you know. But the people that were giving us the finger then looked at us with like puppy dog eyes and they were like, why? Why would you do this
I
to us?
I feel so bad, but I have to give you the finger anyway.
Please, why? Please, don't make it go away.
So you
please?
needed to see what happened with Zach.
So Zach decided.
Yeah, this is why he is the man.
Zach, you know, a lot of people lament the fact that you don't have the big rock show anymore. And Zach is as unpredictable as they come. Like, normally you get the set list down there, and you expect. Zach has about a half dozen song set list. And likes to improvise a little bit. Those of you that were in the indoor beach party are probably familiar with
the math. Six Black Label Society songs on the radio is about 22 minutes. You see them live, and it's like an hour and a half.
Yeah, it was amazing. He's he decides to embellish a little bit. Anybody that was indoor beach party remember the 11 or 12 minute version of In This River that he just kept going and going and going. Well, he does that a lot. Only this time he decided I'm holding about a $3,500 orange Les Paul custom guitar. Here, take it. Hands it to somebody in the crowd. So now we've just got rhythm section and Zach standing there drinking a beer.
Watching the melee.
I think he just did it for his own amusement.
He's an anarchist.
So he hands it to everybody. Now, obviously, the rest of the Black Label crew, the guys that have to be the responsible members while Zach is up there drinking and handing away $3,500 guitars, dive into the crowd like a SWAT team and proceed to retrieve said guitar with, let's just say, zeal.
A verve,
yes,
if you will.
Yes, they were very, very...
I'm using such big boy words.
Yeah, they were very, very...
vigorous.
Thorough, I think. Thorough what they did. Got the guitar back.
Can't you just say tough?
Well, no, you don't want to advocate violence now. They were just merely efficient.
They were strong-willed.
Yes. They were a victorious option.
Do we drink now?
Yeah, we have to drink
now.
Yeah,
you got to drink now.
Mm-hmm. All right. So, so then Zach gets his guitar back, and obviously that one's out of tune, so he passes it back to one of his roadie guys to take care of it, gets a hold of the Randy Rhodes polka-dotted Flying V guitar that he's been known to play once in a while, and starts shredding. I mean, just going nuts. Decides he's not really quite ready to go back into a song, so he hands the guitar to one of his techs, dives into the crowd. The Eddie Vedder Memorial stage dive, if you will, only done by a man much larger.
With a huge chain.
With a wall of chain.
Flailing off of his pants.
Yeah, so he did that, and he was passed around a lot like the mountain man that he looks like. And they pass him back onto the stage. So now the road crew is like, okay, well, at least we got past that. Uh-oh, Zach's not done.
Just wait and imagine the brawny man trying to crowd surf.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
I mean, you're not seeing, there's not a whole lot of
steel toe boots.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So then Zach gets back on stage. The road crew thinks, well, this has got to be the end of it.
No, no, no. He wasn't on stage.
He
was still out in the pit, and they gave him the guitar.
Oh, no, no. He got back on stage first, and the crew thought, okay, this is it. And then he goes, no. Jumps down in between the orchestra pit area and the barrier.
Scared the hell out of the security guards.
Now, like Timmy, Zach's handler, his wrangler, now everybody is like surrounding him, trying to make sure he's going to be all right. He hops over the barricade again, tells them to hand him his guitar. Now, he doesn't have a whole lot of cord. He's got some cord, but not enough cord to go deep into the crowd. And I think that's by design, to be honest with you.
Yeah, it's his leash. Like when your dog is trying to go in and somewhere and needs to sniff another dog's ass, and you're like, I don't think so.
Yeah. So he decided he wanted to play for another 4 or 5 minutes in the first two rows of the audience. Everybody gave him a nice wide berth so that he could do what he needed to do, and he did it well. And the crowd was, I mean, that's the show. You don't see the rock show like that anymore.
He's doing a guitar solo in the middle of a mosh pit. You don't see that a lot.
No.
And everybody stayed clear of him.
Because, children were horrified.
Because Zach, A, cuts a wide path on his own, and B, has about 7 or 8 guys around him
just
at any time.
Just call them
babysitters.
Yeah, that's what they
babysitters.
Are.
Yeah, those are
wranglers.
Really what they are.
They're
man.
Zach wranglers. So that was probably the highlight of the day so far, unless there was something that happened on the second stage that I missed a little bit earlier. Anything amazing and exciting over there that you have
that
to report?
I heard. The usual broken noses, missing fingers, you know, hanging eyeballs.
I heard that Zach went over and jumped up on stage with Rob Zombie and called me a whore and then told me he loved me and then jumped back off stage again.
He called you the C-word, too.
Yes, I heard that, too.
Yeah. So I mean,
I was going to skip over that part for my own, you know, protection. But thanks for bringing it up.
No, he
used to be such a clean and family affair.
It was like Fenway. It used to be friendly and family oriented, and now it's just gone to crap.
Well, there you go, gone to crap.
Ozfest
2005, gone to crap tonight on Fox.
You know what's funny is watching other people that aren't on the tour that show up on the tour. Did you see Tom Hamilton from Aerosmith?
Was that Tom Hamilton?
Yeah, with his kids.
Yeah.
He took them here because they wanted to see the show. And he's walking around with his kids, introducing his kids. Now, he's Tom Hamilton from Aerosmith,
mind you.
Introducing his kids to, like, all the other rock stars. Like, here, guys, this is Mudvayne. And all the Mudvayne guys rule. Are looking at
Aerosmith?
Tom Hamilton
Those guys
going,
suck.
They're going, dude, you're in Aerosmith.
Dad, like, your band is old.
They're like, he's like, yeah, I know, but did you meet my kids? It's very surreal.
Yeah, that's
strange.
And that's, again... the privilege of being backstage, and we didn't even have to fillet a roadie.
Well,
no, but we did get effed because we are wearing New York Yankees jerseys.
So we have that going for us, which is nice.
There was no fellatio, but we definitely got effed.
617-931-1AAF. We probably should play a hairball in a little bit. And maybe we'll do the commercials first, come back, play some music, and then hook you up with your hairball
request. White Lion?
Yeah, maybe the hairball should be White Lion in honor of James Lomenzo. So we'll take care of the commercials. We'll come back live at Ozfest 2005. If it rocks, it's 107.